Infamous Indy presents the Digging Up Dillinger Project, featuring the Texas Crime Travelers and Travis Thompson. I'm your host, Joe Melillo. In the annals of American crime, few figures loom as large as John Dillinger. A mastermind of bank heists, his name became synonymous with brazen robberies and daring escapes. Questions on whether he escaped an FBI ambush and the whereabouts of his buried loot persevere. History offers one account, but there are whispers that tell us many more. Join us as we go digging up Dillinger.
Hey everybody, welcome to Digging Up Dillinger, episode 10. I'm your host, Joe Melillo. We're back. Travis Thompson, Stuart Fillmore, Todd Hiles. We took a little hiatus, and we are officially back again to finish the Fillmore Report for this episode. We're so happy you're listening. And guys, how are you doing today?
Doing great.
Awesome.
Awesome.
I talk to you guys more than my family, I swear to God, sometimes.
It seems like it, doesn't it? I know.
And you guys know I'm serious. If you get a phone call from me and I'm like, I got an idea.
Yes.
Hey, I know, because you never know when inspiration is going to hit, right?
Exactly.
And we've been doing a lot of work behind the scenes to kind of get more and more info and kind of dive deeper into this case in a lot of different ways. So we're really excited to bring that to you as it develops. As we've talked about before in the intro, this is a developing historical podcast. We have things that we're working on. The end goal being we'd like to dig up John Dillinger out of the grave. If we could say number one, like, it'd be great to dig him up if we could get his DNA some other way. And then obviously go treasure hunting for his buried loot. So Travis, you were telling us before the podcast got recording that you've been doing some work. So why don't you share some of that with the viewers? What's an update from your end?
Yes. So the transcripts from 2019, when my father was in court against Crown Hill, trying to get the courts to decide in our favor to exhume the body, I have now requested the transcripts of that court hearing, so then we can bring to the viewers everything that was said in the courtroom, because the media did not report anything that was said other than, hey, the family lost. So this would bring everything
well, Mike lost. I mean, you know, it was portrayed as like this big family feud kind of thing, but yeah.
Which we'll get more into as we dive deeper into the behind the scenes of you guys going to court. You know, I think also from a former broadcast and news journalism perspective, I would say headlines sell, homie. You know, if you lost, I mean, everybody wants to read that story, or, you know, they won and they're going to get it. What's the update? But once the story's dead, they don't really care. Like, it's not, it's done. You guys are done. So you chop liver, you're on the cutting room floor, whatever saying you want to put out there.
Yeah.
But you guys had a good effort. So I'm excited to see those transcripts, because have you seen them since you went to court?
No.
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 You know, and I think Travis and I, both our memories are, you know, that the judge was very much in favor of what we wanted to do. But he was hamstrung by the way that that our case had been filed in court, and just under the particular statute that it had been filed under, the cemetery could just refuse to do it and really give no reason. And they didn't, I guess they did give a couple of reasons, Travis, as I recall.
Yeah.
But the judge openly told them he wasn't buying it. He didn't believe them. He thought, you know, that this should happen, but he couldn't do it because his hands were tied under the statute that our side had filed under.
Yeah, because they're concerned about disturbing other graves to exhume the body. But in the same, as I remember, they also said they exhume bodies all the time.
Exactly. So. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I actually read the filing that our attorney had used, you know, to get that hearing. And I'd forgotten some of the details of it. But, you know, initially Crown Hill was cooperative with this for weeks, if not months, you know, for doing this. And, you know, some things happened that maybe we'll get way more in depth on, you know, on another time, but some things happened. And then all of a sudden, man, they're the polar opposite of cooperative. And, you know, just unfortunately, again, the way our case was filed, we were, we had zero chance of winning walking into that hearing from the start. It was really just a unfortunate series of events there.
Did you share your report with the cemetery?
Never got a chance to, because you know, really nothing substantive was discussed other than if the cemetery says no, which they were, it was clear what their stance was. But at that point, Crown Hill, the judge said it's irrelevant. You know, you can have the most convincing evidence possible, but if the cemetery, under the way you filed it, if the cemetery doesn't give consent, you can't do it.
So, and you got to remember, this was not the normal cemetery Crown Hill's lawyers. They went outside and got a big firm to fight this.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I think there's really a whole episode about that whole saga that we'll get into in another time.
Yeah, and what we'll do is we'll probably grab the files and we'll read them to our listeners so everybody can have an understanding together of what was said, because I wasn't there either and I've never seen him. So I'll make sure to read the part of the judge in a very favorable way, right? Yep. When I'm reading, I'll be acting the
Yeah, I don't think you'll have to act much. As I recall, his words were pretty clear and pretty stern. He was not happy with Crown Hill and very sympathetic to us.
Why do you think he wasn't happy? What gives you that impression that he wasn't happy with Crown Hill? I mean, why would he have any stake in the game?
I think I'm speculating, but the feeling I got was is that he felt there was a compelling historical mystery here that, you know, would be easily solved. We probably would have solved it within an hour or so of opening up that grave, because, you know, although DNA is the most definitive science and we certainly, you know, will have that avenue open to us. There's other things that we could identify that body with, dental records that would be pretty obvious right from the start. So, it just wasn't going to be that complicated of an issue to do it. And it's been done before. I mean, Dillinger's already been exhumed once, so it's not like it's something that hasn't already been done.
Yeah, the precedent was already set with the first time.
Exactly. Well,
so did he read your file? Sorry, Travis. Did he read your file real quick?
No. That's what I mean. We never got to that point.
My thought is you have pre-meetings with your judge. Do you ever meet with him beforehand?
We weren't involved. Travis and I were not involved in those hearings. I will say this though, that the day of the court hearing, they had the lawyers had I think it's called in camera meeting with the judge, and when they came out, the judge appeared very, very exasperated. The Crown Hill lawyers were as nervous as any lawyers I've ever seen in a courtroom.
Yes,
they were so uncomfortable and just did not even want to be there. It was really the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. It really was.
Didn't in my memory there? Didn't our attorney bring up the case that in so many years they've granted every exhumation except for this one? It's the first one they've ever said no to.
Yeah, I think this was the only one they've said no to, just outright no.
And they have the right to do that under filing of exhumation under the state statute. So totally understandable that they would do it and the publicity would be too heavy. That's what, like, if in a layman's way, that would be my thought is I don't want to deal with this.
Yeah.
This is massive. This is worldwide. It literally went worldwide. The BBC was covering it at some point.
Exactly.
Travis was working on his English accent.
So it will be interesting to get the transcript and really give the listeners a real flavor of what that was about and what was said.
I'm super pumped for that. So Travis, when we get it in, obviously we'll post it. To be honest with our listeners, like, we have been doing a lot of pre-work for this podcast. So a lot of these episodes are pre-recorded. So we're doing this stuff before this releases. We're going to be releasing soon, and we're so excited.
Yeah.
June 22nd, yes, Dillinger's birthday. What a cool thing for us to do. And I think the work that we're putting in behind the scenes, you know, us looking for another route to go, whether it's another stab at court, we can't do it without you guys listening and following us on TikTok. We did double our TikTok this week. We doubled it
up.
Yeah,
all right. Hey, thanks a lot.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Thank you,
viewers. Really appreciate that. That's great.
And here's the deal. If you like one of us more than the other, please tell the other ones that you don't like them as much as the other one. So please comment that you like me more than you like Travis, especially on our videos. So we have a little competition inside joke that, you know, we're all who's winning. And I'm winning currently with the highest video count. So, but
I'm in
you know,
third.
Yeah,
I'm
yep. in third. Travis came in quick he was the last one to post and he's coming in quick. But you know what, Travis, you and I pale in comparison to the Texas Crime Travelers.
Very true.
Yeah. So you guys are doing a killer job. People are coming up to me and being like, yo, I see your guy all the time on my For You page. And I'm like, oh, I know. That's because they got 500,000 followers. Anyway, let's go into the last thing that we're going to talk about on this Fillmore Report. Stuart, thank you, man.
Yeah.
This has been such a journey to share this all. We've had a great hours. I mean, literally, this is like hour 9 of us talking about this.
You know, and this is the first time that this has really ever been shown to the public.
It is.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, it is. You know, and really, this was something, you know, I think we're going to have some guests later on the show when we talk about kind of the saga of this whole thing. But I was very, very skeptical of this before I kind of put this report together. And, you know, again, it's one of those things that, you know, it very well could be Dillinger in the grave. We're not saying that we've definitively solved that it's an imposter or whatever, but there's just, you know, there's enough questions here that just these really unanswered questions and anomalies of this thing that, you know, once I finished it, I said, you know, there really is something here. There's a mystery here. And, you know, let's just solve it with the most efficient means possible. And I didn't realize what a firestorm that would be, but it was.
You fire starter. You love to stir shit up. So if you're watching on YouTube, thank you. Please like, subscribe, comment, and share. But you're going to be looking at the Alfini letter comments here from the Fillmore Report. And if you're listening, maybe you've never heard of the Alfini letter. Neither have I. So, Stuart, I'll leave it to you to kind of like dive into this, and we'll scroll up and down. You tell me what you want. But long story short, I don't know very much about it until I read this report. So this is interesting.
Yeah, so after we had found the map at the Dillinger farm while we were filming the sizzle reel for a potential show that, you know, might have been on the History Channel or Netflix or something like that, we found that, and I guess certain people in Hollywood thought we had faked that, and that just, you know, was too good to be true. But they wanted us to chase down this imposter theory. And so that's where that got started. And so in talking with the producer that we were working with at the time, he mentioned that, you know, how would a fugitive, like if Dillinger had gotten away and he would have been a fugitive, how would he have been caught? What would have been the method of trying to find him in those days? And I suggested that, you know, we have a, you don't want to just listen to me all the time. We need other faces and other perspectives on the show. So I actually suggested that maybe we find some money from the U.S. Marshals Service to maybe help us out, because their specialty is fugitives. And so we did. And I located a retired deputy marshal named Billy Sarukas, who lives up in Indiana, and he actually was excited about the project as well, and actually went out and did some research on his own, and he found this letter, the Alfini letter, with I believe a historical society somewhere in Indiana. I forget the details of it, but and I had never seen or heard of this before at all. I think folks from Indianapolis may, you know, of course it's been a long time ago, but may know the name Alfini. He was the mayor of Indianapolis for several years in the, you know, mid century, late 40s, early 50s or so. And so what Billy Sarukas found was this letter that was written in December of 1949 to the mayor of Terre Haute, Indiana. Which, Travis, how far is Terre Haute from Indianapolis?
Hour and
about
a half.
35 minutes, something like that.
Yeah. Okay, so it's
hour
not
and
real
a half.
Okay,
hour so and not, a half.
Yeah, dude. I don't know how fast you're driving, but
maybe by wagon, maybe.
Yeah.
No,
Travis puts the red lights and sirens on.
That's what I'm saying.
He gets there quickly. He's in a car chase.
I can't do that now. I can't do
so,
that.
So it's a relatively short letter, and so I'll just read it, and because it's pretty interesting. It's to the Honorable Ralph Tucker, City Hall, Terre Haute, Indiana, December 3rd, 1949. Dear Mayor, I regret to inform you that John Dillinger is alive and in your city. This will be somewhat of a shock to you, as it was to me, and especially when I thought I had attended John's funeral in Crown Hill Cemetery here in Indianapolis some years ago. The enclosed letter will be of assistance to your police department. Cordially yours, Al Feeney, Mayor. Unfortunately, as great of a job as Billy did in finding this letter, he did not find the enclosed letter. So we don't really know what Al Feeney was referencing here. This was really just more of a cover letter. But what's interesting is, this is in 1949, you know, Dillinger was killed in 34, and in 1934, Al Feeney was at that time the head of the Indiana State Police, and the Indiana State Police had actually been the first agency to be involved in the hunt for Dillinger. They were on his trail long before the FBI was, and so Al Feeney would have been, I mean, he would have been absolutely thoroughly familiar with who John Dillinger was. So this letter to me, I just find the letter intriguing that you know, there's no doubt Feeney, you know, not only just being someone from Indiana, you know, Indianapolis, but actually having been the head of the Indiana State Police. I mean, he knew who Dillinger was. So what I think possibly what this letter is the, I don't, again, it's an enclosed letter, so I don't know who the original letter was sent to, but what Feeney read.
It's one half of the key, unfortunately.
It is. Just, I mean, like yes. Just like everything else in this case.
Yes.
But so anyway, I think probably what it was is that Feeney or someone in maybe Indianapolis PD had received, you know, this letter from a concerned citizen that says, hey, I saw John Dillinger, he's still alive. And, you know, he was in Terre Haute. Feeney probably didn't take it seriously and just thought, you know, this is just a joke. And he sent this cover letter really more of as just a tongue in cheek. You know, I was shocked. And, you know, I thought I had attended John's funeral, but
I regret to inform you that yeah. John Dillinger. OK, let's read it as if it was kind of a joke. You know, like,
so
I regret
to
inform you that John Dillinger is alive in your city. This is somewhat of a shock as it was to me, especially when I thought he attended John's funeral in Crown Hill Cemetery here in Indianapolis some years ago. I mean, I could see it being a joke or like something that he's joking around. But Stuart, would a mayor spend his time sending a cover letter and then actual letter? I mean,
possibly.
It was their only form of, you know, only form of communication. So maybe this was the only way to joke around with your buds.
Exactly. I think more than likely this is a joke. This was not, you know, in other words, whoever sent whatever letter that he's referencing probably thought they saw Dillinger and it was a legitimate thing. You know, I've seen this. I've seen him. It's him. You know, he's in Terre Haute, whatever. Feeney, I don't think probably took it seriously, but forwarded that letter nonetheless, and then wrote this letter, which I think is kind of tongue in cheek. But again, there's not really a punchline to the letter.
Closed letter will be assistance to your police department. It almost sounds like matter of fact, like
exactly. Right. Yes, exactly. So again, it's just one more thing that is just funky about this case. That's just an unanswered question that, you know, is just makes me put my hands up and say, you know, hey, there's something here. There's something here. People, since at least, well, I know it happened about 3 days after the Biograph shooting of Dillinger, when the FBI first heard that there was a scheme to use an imposter to replace him. But, you know, I mean, in 1949, someone saying there's an imposter, you know, that the real Dillinger's out there. So this is not new. This is not something that we've just dreamed up. This has been out there for a long time. It can be solved. It's not something that's an impossibility to solve. It's relatively simple. And, you know, let's definitively do it. I mean, because if it's a quick fix, if we can definitively solve this, then it you know, it puts this to the thing that a lot of people think is silly, puts it to rest.
Tell us how you really feel, Stuart.
And and if it's you know, if it turns out that you know, it is an imposter, that's the crime of the century. I mean,
crime of the century. Cover up of the century.
So, well, certainly the cover up of the century. Absolutely.
The FBI built their entire name off of.
It literally changes history, and you know, it's only really you know, a couple of administrative steps away to do it.
Cool.
Yes.
We're moving. I'm really a fan that you don't have the other half of this. It really keeps it to the point where it's a super mystery. But like, how can we not? And you said the dude that found this letter really did a good job, like trying to find the other one. Who is there?
Well, he, you know, like I said, he got this at a historical society that I just don't remember the name off the top of my head. Oh. But I think my memory is that they did a really hard search to try to find, you know, the enclosure with this letter, but didn't find it.
But I think if this was tongue in cheek, he would have ended something like, call me when you find them.
Yeah.
Or write back.
Yeah. Exactly. Some kind of punchline. Yes.
Right. Right. Yeah. It's missing that, but I think you could be correct that it's
like
probably
literally
they got a letter in the mail.
Yeah.
And he's just forwarding it to their police department to say, hey, we think the guy lives at this house there. So the police are going to go knock.
And if there was any follow up, you know, it's I guess it's lost to history, or maybe that's a lead we put, you know, for us to do is to check in the Terre Haute police records that if they ever covered a lead in, you know, December of 1949.
December of 49, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And if you want to be part of the Digging of Dillinger crew, start doing your own research and look up the see if Terre Haute Police Department and send us what you find. Like, literally. Like,
exactly.
Absolutely.
For a lot of our listeners who don't know where Terre Haute is, it sits on the Indiana-Illinois line. So John would have been extremely familiar with the Illinois side, so he could have been hiding out there and bouncing back and forth between the states.
Yeah, and another thing, too, is one of Dillinger's gang members, Russell Clark, was actually from the county that Terre Haute is in. I think it's Vigo County.
Yes.
So, you know, there's another little connection. Again, it probably... You know, does it mean anything? But again, it's just one other little thing that
added up
makes you wonder. It exactly
added up. What an interesting thing. So, in conclusion, can you guys hear those cars in the background? By the way, I'm outside. We had a change of venue tonight, and it's beautiful weather here in Indiana. But this in conclusion, Paige, you know, I think we've covered it to the T here. The information in this report is circumstantial, right?
Mm-hmm.
We're gonna, and it's not just gonna be us too. Remember, we're gonna be bringing this hopefully to court and have another. Hopefully, have that same judge kind of look at this again. So
yes,
look forward to it. Actually,
if you do want a copy of the Fillmore report, we'd be happy to send it to you. You can just head to our TikTok page. If you don't have TikTok, it's on Linktree. It's on Facebook, and you can click on the Linktree and then log in and sign up for our newsletter. And what I'll do is I'll actually send you a copy if you just put in looking for the Fillmore report, almost like a code word. If you put that in, I'll send it to everybody. And we just ask for your email, and we'll send it over. So, guys, this we're 10 episodes in here. I'm feeling really motivated. And we got a big week coming up next week. It's our, like I said, it's our release week. So we're really excited about this. We're going to let everybody finally hear this podcast. And if you're binge listening, like we're hoping, you're going to be caught up by the time this episode airs, and then we're going to have more. What do you all think is where do you see this going right now for us, now that we've been working on it for about 2 months? I know we keep talking about it, but like in your mind's eye, where are we at a year from now?
Well, hopefully we are in court getting permission to do this thing. But knowing how this case has been going on, I'm waiting for that roadblock that's going to come out of nowhere to kind of give us that curveball.
Oh, Travis. What are you doing, dude? You're speaking it into existence, homie.
Sorry. We've been down this road, and I'm just, everything's been going smooth for the most part, and I don't want to get my hopes up.
You know, I've watched in frustration, frankly, for I think 14 seasons it's been on, The Curse of Oak Island on the History Channel, and one of the enduring themes of that show is every time they get close to the truth, you know, something happens that that blocks the truth from coming out. And in some ways, this case feels a little bit like that. Talking about when we initially found that map, just how excited we were about that, that we had found an actual artifact that was legitimate, was real, was right there on the Dillinger farm, was a legitimate mystery. And Hollywood just blew it off, just had no interest in it. You know, to Josh Gates and Expedition Unknown, to their credit, you know, they thought it was an interesting story and did highlight it, you know, and talked about it on Expedition Unknown. But, you know, the format of that show is not really to go in depth, maybe that, I think this map needs, because I think it actually is a code of some kind. We know the Dillinger gang, or at least the FBI file describes the Dillinger gang, you know, using codes. And I think the map itself is some kind of a code for what? I don't know.
The first time that we put that map out there, I think there's going to be people that are going to be familiar or say, hey, or have ideas.
Yeah. With this. Right. Yeah. So that, you know, I think that was, it's like we started off. I mean, this was when the whole thing had started. And right off the bat, you know, we find something that just seems like blockbuster to us. And then it just gets poo-pooed and forgotten, and you know, it was no big deal. And
you planted it.
We planted it, and then we waited for that root grow over it.
Exactly. This was a six-year root at least.
Exactly. Yeah. And somehow we aged the DNA that we found on it, you know, to be 80 years old. So yeah,
we really worked hard at hiding this and putting it in the ground.
Oh yeah, man. We wanted to make it authentic.
It was so sad that we were all excited. All of us were talking about a series. I mean,
yeah,
everyone was like, oh, we've got a show, no doubt. And then it died.
But don't forget, you guys weren't allowed to talk to anybody else about it.
No. We were under NDAs. And,
yeah,
that beginning has kind of been the norm for what we've experienced on this thing. And, you know, I'm sure there's some people out there that are going to say, oh, you know, these guys just want to be on TV and they just want sensationalism. But, you know, it's really, that's not the case. We just want to solve a historical mystery and just solve it once and for all.
I want to know the truth. I mean, it's not just my family's history. It's United States history. It's all of the viewers' history.
Yep.
If the FBI got it wrong, then they got it wrong.
And the world needs to know that.
Yes. And if we're wrong, we're wrong. But we'll never know until we put a shovel in that ground and bring his remains up and test it.
Exactly. That's the only way to know.
Bring his ass up and test it.
Right.
to document, too, you know, you guys ran into these roadblocks as I was following your journey together, right? We were friends. You guys were telling me what was up. I did sign an NDA for the map too. Because I wanted to know, because Travis, you wanted to tell me, and I feel honored. I really appreciate you, man, trusting me with that. And, you know, obviously I didn't break the NDA. So, but here's the deal, that those little roadblocks that we keep talking about, they keep happening. They keep happening now. So just let's over the last couple of weeks, just for you guys, like we said, we're pre-recording this. We had my computer this week crapped out. Literally, this computer I've had for 2.5 years, no problems, done a million other podcasts and YouTubes, the motherboard fried. Stuart, we were trying to record for 3 days in a row with a guest, and that kind of went down the tube because in Texas you guys had what? Did you have hurricanes or tornadoes?
Had a couple of tornadoes. We had some, you know, super strong winds. We had torrential rains. Thunderstorms. So power outages, trees falling through houses. It was crazy. And so luckily, you know, we were without power for a couple of days, and luckily mercifully it wasn't hot. So it was, you know, you could still sleep with the windows open and so forth. So it was tolerable from there. But as far as doing a show, it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, you were going to do it by candlelight.
It's either the curse of Dillinger or the ghost of Hoover.
It's got to be Hoover.
It's got to be Hoover.
Yeah.
because really the entire brand of the FBI was built on Dillinger. And, you know, if in fact that this is not true, that's going to be, you know, it's going to be, wow, you guys, you know, you built your reputation on getting your man. And the first man that you got, you didn't get him, you know? So,
three times you missed him.
I really, really like to solve that once and for all so that we can say, you know, that the history of the FBI getting its man, at least it was right in that first case. And, you know, and if not, then we need to know.
I would like to do an episode on Hoover. If we can do some research on who he was, give our listeners, I would like, cause I honestly, other than the basic information, you know, I don't really know, although there is some controversy surrounding him.
Yeah,
but maybe we can go into Hoover a little bit. I think he's a main player, and then
no doubt he is, and he's you're right. There is some controversy around him. There's some things that I think people will you know, can easily kind of make fun of, you know. But there's just like any human being, he was a complicated guy, and there's more to the story. So it is an interesting background on him.
And it'd be really funny because we have a lot of people being like on our TikTok, hey, why are you covering this gangster? He was a terrible, he should be thrown away and never remembered and all this other stuff. And Travis's TikTok, you know, he literally says, hey, we want to show the human side. But if people would know what, a little bit more about J. Edgar Hoover, they're not too far off. There's a lot of in between, or gray area, I should say, on whether or not who's good and who's really bad, right?
Yeah, a hero or a villain.
Exactly. Yeah. I never thought of it in those terms, Joe, but that's actually a very good point.
Yep. It's a classic historical, you know, interpretation of, and what propaganda truly, I mean, if I'm not trying to be, you know, start something here, but in the end, like, you know, it is what we are being told in history, right? Yep. This person robbed, but then again, we know that from stories about John, he was one of the nicest people because of the fact he was just like, hey man, I just want money and I don't want to hurt anybody. And you know, we've talked about the dispute on whether or not he was involved in the murder and during the killing. So it's a lot. There's a lot to go in here. Has there any bit, have we ran into any other roadblocks other than my computer, the storms?
Oh, well, that's just Travis's recent. Computer. That's just the recent stuff. Yeah. I mean, computer. That's just the recent stuff.
Yeah, that's been like, I got kicked out of that TV station. That was pretty crazy.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So we've had several roadblocks just since we started this project, but it's not the first. Since at least Travis and I have been on this.
Nothing in life worth doing is
exactly
easy. So
exactly.
We're happy to be here.
If it were easy, everyone would be doing this.
That's right.
Well, let's close things up here for this episode 10 on the Digging Up Dillinger podcast, part of our Digging Up Dillinger project. Follow us on Facebook, TikTok, and email us at diggingupdillinger@gmail.com if you have ideas. Like, share, comment, subscribe. Back in Crime Podcast, got to shout you guys out. We're gonna have a guest coming up very, very soon that was involved with all of this history stuff that we were just talking about, History Channel stuff that we were just talking about. So it'll be really good. Any last thoughts, fellas?
Hey, we love our supporters. We thank you so much for listening and taking an interest in this thing. You know, we really are grateful for you. Thank you.
Send the comments.
Yes.
Yeah, it gives us direction. We'd love to hear from you guys. And if you guys start telling us to do something, we'll start doing it. So, all right, until next time, keep digging.
The Digging Up Dillinger podcast is produced by Joe Melillo and Grace Hiles. Theme music produced by Eddie Bandis. Follow us on TikTok, Facebook, and YouTube. Until next time, keep digging.